funding. This chapter details current disability service funding arrangements through Aging, Disability and Home Care, ADHC, and other major funding streams such as the National Disability Agreement and the Home and Community Care Program. This includes a discussion of the adequacy and the difficulties of measuring unmet and "undermet" demand. ADHC's procurement of services provided by other agencies and non-government organizations is also discussed in this chapter, along with possible alternative models of funding. Aging, Disability and Home Care Funding 3.1. The role of ADHC is to promote social inclusion by providing services to older people and people with disability, to assist them to live independently and participate in the community. 1. ADHC was incorporated into the newly created Department of Human Services in 2009. 3.2. Chapter 2 provides background to disability service system funding in New South Wales, including state and Commonwealth funding contributions. 3.3. In 2010-11, ADHC's budget totals $2.5 billion. 2. This figure includes both specialist disability and home and community care, HACC, funding. HACC provides services for both the aging and people with disability. Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, ADHC, described ADHC's role in assisting people with disability and their families. We as an agency are predominantly, in terms of size, overseeing dollar size, about $1.9 billion, that we spend on disability services, about $550 million, that we spend on home community care services, and a small number of millions of dollars, to the tune of $10 million to $15 million, we spend on various services for what we would refer to the well-aged things, ranging from Seniors Week events and seniors concerts, seniors card and those sorts of things, and a small amount of aging grants. But our business is predominantly about assisting about 50,000 families and people with a disability with specialist disability services, and about 250,000 generally frail older people. But there are some people with a disability who get home and community care services. 3.4. As noted in Chapter 2, ADHC provides a range of specialist services for people with disability, including community access programs, learning and life skills development, respite and accommodation services. Employment and income support programs for people with disability are provided by the Commonwealth Government. The adequacy of funding and unmet need for disability services. 3.5. There was widespread acknowledgement among inquiry participants that increased expenditure, particularly through Stronger Together, has improved the availability of services for people with disability in recent years. For example, Mr. Douglas Erd, Executive Officer, Disability Council of New South Wales, observed that Stronger Together funding had made a significant difference to people with disability. It is true to say, without wishing to be seen to be using hyperbole, that the atmosphere before the Stronger Together policy was put in place in the sector, as it likes to describe itself, the relationship between people with disability and the department, between people with disability and government, between non-government advocacy organizations and government, and sometimes with non-government service providers, was hostile and difficult at times. My personal opinion, that was because gross levels of unmet need meant that people with disability were not getting access to services, and that family members were doing enormously difficult jobs under huge stresses to look after and care for both themselves and family members who ought to have been receiving services. The $1.4 billion that we subsequently got through Stronger Together has made a very significant difference. There is no doubt about that at all. 3.6. Some inquiry participants felt that funding for disability services is inadequate. 5. The Physical Disability Council of New South Wales and the Council on the Aging New South Wales, for example, believe that demand greatly exceeds the supply of funding. 6. Similarly, Ms. Jennifer Arlo expressed the view that inadequate funding meant that the system was unable to respond to need when it reached crisis level. In New South Wales, the disability support system clearly does not have enough money to adequately meet the needs of people with disability, PWD, resulting in a system of crisis intervention only. 7. 3.7. Many participants acknowledged that funding for disability services had increased in recent years, particularly since Stronger Together, but felt that, while Stronger Together has improved the adequacy of the disability support system, since 2006 it has been a good first step only. 8. For instance, Professor Ron McCallum, Chair of the Disability Council of New South Wales, expressed the view that there is still a long way to go. He said that we need more money in the disability sector. The committee heard from Mr. Moore how the sector is growing, how funding is growing faster than the all-consuming health budget, yet we know our sisters and brothers with non-English speaking backgrounds still require more services and are underrepresented. Similarly, although splendid work is being done with Indigenous Australians in New South Wales, we know that there is a long way to go. 9.3.8. Ms. Christine Regan, Senior Policy Officer, Council of Social Service New South Wales, NCOS, noted that the increase in funding for disability services, including that provided through Stronger Together, did not result in an adequate increase in services. There has been money streaming into disability services in the past 15 years or so, but the number of new services bought for that has been very small. For example, for a doubling of the DADHC budget in disability, we got less than a 19% increase in the number of people using disability supported accommodation. So really it was more about bringing the services and standards up to date rather than increasing the number of people who could use them. 10.3.9. The view that funding for disability services remains inadequate is based on an unmet need for services. However, the definition and measurement of unmet need in the context of disability services can be complex. Mr. Moore explained ADHC's understanding of unmet need and the problems in trying to quantify it. The definition we work with is the level of need for support that needs to be met by government intervention, but is not being met. A person with a disability may need assistance with getting out of bed. That does not require government intervention in all circumstances for that to happen. So you have this very difficult issue to determine, which is not just whether there is an objective need, but how best for that need to be met, government intervention or not. To answer how we define unmet need, it has to come down to quite a technical one of need required to be met by government intervention and not being met by government intervention. 11.3.10. The existence of unmet need for disability services was widely acknowledged by participants in the inquiry and is examined in more detail in Chapter 6. For example, National Disability Services wrote that IT is an undeniable reality, that there remain people with disability, families, and carers in need of services and supports. 12. Similarly, People with Disability wrote of considerable unmet need. PWD is aware of considerable unmet need for disability services in New South Wales. We regularly assist people with disability and their families who have been waiting for long periods of time for services, who are in crisis due to lack of services or failures in the service system, who cannot control the supports they need, who fall between service system gaps, or who cannot obtain a service unless they are in crisis. 13.3.11. Ms. Regan felt that the degree of unmet need in the community was significant and provided an example of the crises that unmet need can generate for people with disability and their families. We would say that there is a crisis looming, and there is such a degree of unmet need at the moment that we hear some really tragic stories. I know of one woman who could not get equipment into her house in order to have her son, who had very high support needs, seated and into bed. This was only about 3 years ago. She used to put a sleeping bag on the floor, and she fed him on the floor, until her own shoulders gave out, and she had to go into hospital. Only at that point was she offered supported accommodation for her son, when she had completely broken down. These stories just happen over and over. It is shameful. 14.3.12. Some inquiry participants referred to the concept of undermet need as well as unmet need, which refers to a need which is only partially met by an available service. For example, Mr. Patrick Mayer, Chief Operating Officer and State Manager of National Disability Services, explained the difference between the two terms. We are dealing with an environment where you have a department ADHC that has a finite budget to meet a need that is far in excess of that which they can fund. So without significant additional funding being brought into the sector, we are going to have unmet need. There is a capacity To identify some of that unmet need, I think undermet need is probably best explained in some of the active aging type programs that aging, disability and home care has out there, where people may have been funded to receive 1, 2, or 3 days support a week, when in reality their needs are for 4 or 5 days, or their families or carers' needs are for 4 or 5 days. So there is a need being met, but it is not the full need. 15.3.13. The concept of undermet need further complicates attempts to measure unmet need, as data in relation to service provision may actually serve to mask undermet need. MCOS provided the following example to illustrate this issue. A family might accept the offer of respite for their loved one with very high support needs as a temporary measure, when they actually desperately require appropriate supported living/accommodation. ADHC can correctly indicate that services were provided to meet the specified need, but those very people and families would indicate undermet need, rather than needs met. 16.3.14. Mr. Moore acknowledged that there is unmet need for disability services in New South Wales. 17. However, he emphasized that measuring the level of unmet need is a complex task. Understanding the numbers of people, and understanding how many of those people are getting services, is the easy bit. Being able to then extrapolate from that as to what is the right level of intervention is required, how much need is not being met, how much need needs to be met by government intervention, and what sort of government intervention, in respect of those things there is a real paucity of data. 18.3.15. The lack of reliable data to accurately measure unmet need was noted by several participants in the inquiry. 19. This makes it difficult to assess what kind of services are most in demand, or where the demand lies. The difficulty in measuring need is further complicated by regional variations, as the committee was advised by Carers New South Wales, who said that the adequacy of funding and the extent of unmet need for services in New South Wales varies. 20.3.16. However, MCOS disputed the view that data about unmet need is not available, instead pointing out that much data collected by ADHC is not analysed. There is plenty of information provided to and collected by ADHC that is not analysed for indicators of unmet need. Much of this information is provided under a compliance requirement for each funded service, and when received, ADHC officers store it against that organization's information deposit. 21. Committee comment. 3.17. The committee recognizes that, despite increases in funding and available services in recent years primarily as a result of Stronger Together, there is still significant unmet need for aging and disability services in New South Wales. However, attempts to quantify the level of unmet need for various services is currently hampered by a lack of quality data, data analysis, collection, and management. 3.18. The committee notes that additional examination of issues regarding disability services data are examined in Chapter 9. 3.19. The committee acknowledges that measuring unmet need is a complex task. However, the committee considers that an accurate assessment of unmet need is crucial to the future planning of disability services in New South Wales. The committee therefore believes that ADHC should commission further work to assess unmet need in services provided by the agency and to make this information publicly available. 3.20. The committee notes that issues regarding unmet need are examined in detail in Chapter 6, including analysis of specific service types that were identified as experiencing significant unmet need. Recommendation 1. That the Minister for Disability Services audit the existing data that is collected by ADHC and data that is available to ADHC. Identify any additional data that is required to accurately assess unmet and undermet need for aging and disability services in New South Wales. That the New South Wales Government amend the Disability Services Act 1993, New South Wales, to require the Minister for Disability Services to table a biannual report into unmet and undermet need for aging and disability services in New South Wales. Recommendation 2. That ADHC prioritise the attainment of its targets for supported accommodation places, as identified in the first phase of Stronger Together. Stronger Together 2. 3.21. Several inquiry participants discussed unmet need in relation to the second phase of Stronger Together. Stronger Together is a 10-year strategy with the first 5-year phase due to be completed in 2011. 3.22. The Hon. Peter Primrose, Minister for Disability Services, told Parliament that consultation to inform the next 5 years of Stronger Together commenced in June 2010. As we approach the halfway mark of Stronger Together, the New South Wales Government's 10-year plan for disability services, we have taken the opportunity to conduct an extensive consultation program to inform the next 5 years of the plan. We were strongly committed to ensuring that the consultations took into account a diversity of views to help shape the future of disability services in New South Wales. Over 300 people attended these consultations. We received 420 written submissions following the consultation paper from people with a disability, their families and carers, as well as a broad spectrum of service providers and advocates. As with the first stage of Stronger Together, stakeholder consultations will be critical in making sure we get the next 5 years right for people with a disability in New South Wales. I note, for example, that one of the key messages to come out of the consultation process is that people want more choice and control over how the funding currently allocated to them is used. We have heard that message from the community, and the New South Wales Labor Government will, as part of the next 5-year phase of Stronger Together, deliver personalised funding arrangements for people with a disability as part of our person-centred approach. 22.3.23. During the Ageing, Disability Services, Volunteering and Youth Portfolio Budget Estimates hearing in September 2010, the Minister for Disability Services advised General Purpose Standing Committee 2 that WE will be making an announcement about Stronger Together second towards the end of this calendar year. 23.3.24. The views of inquiry participants about funding and unmet need frequently converged around the priorities and planning for the second phase of Stronger Together. Mr. Moore reflected on the history and current situation of disability services in New South Wales in the following terms. Most of the responses in the disability stage had been of the ilk of reacting to pressure at the moment. With Stronger Together, we acquired a more systemic response. The government set some longer objectives that we were required to manage against. In the early years of Stronger Together, the implementation was about getting the resources out the door. The choice that we made and rolling out the $1.3 billion that was part of Stronger Together in the first 5 years was to get capacity on the ground to do some of the major policy things. As we are now heading towards the second 5 years, we are doing a lot of policy refinement and tidying up and moving ourselves to being able to administer the system more systematically. 24.3.25. Some participants in the inquiry also expressed views about the level of funding which is required for the second phase in order to meet the objectives of Stronger Together. For example, Mr. Hurd suggested that $2 billion of new funding is required. When we talk about Stronger Together second, I have yet to meet a human being on the planet who is prepared to say in public that they think Stronger Together second should be funded for anything less than $2 billion worth of new money. That takes it up to $5 billion in 5 years' time. 25.3.26. Mr. Mayer expressed a similar view in regard to costing the second phase. He said that, "I am happy to go on record as saying that needs to be well in excess of $2 billion for the second 5 years, to maintain the identified growth that is needed. It is $2 billion over 5 years. I am saying $2.5 billion over 5 years additional funding to complement what was to be $1.3 billion over the first 5 years of Stronger Together. 26.3.27. The government has not yet announced its proposed direction in terms of funding for the second phase of Stronger Together. The committee's inquiry has highlighted the level of interest and concern in the disability sector about funding for Stronger Together second. For example, Mr. Hurd commented that Premier Kennedy has indicated that her government will give a statement on perhaps the number by the end of the year. We are all waiting with bated breath for that number. 27. Committee comment 3.28. The funding and policy priorities of Stronger Together second have the potential to address many of the issues identified through this inquiry, including the significant level of unmet need in some service types and a clear implementation of person-centered planning. The committee agrees that funding of the second phase of Stronger Together will require the commitment of a significant amount of funding, given the increasing population and the number of issues in the disability service system that require immediate attention. 3.29. The committee agrees with Mr. Mayer and Mr. Hurd that funding for Stronger Together second should be well in excess of $2 billion, and recommends that the government commit at least $2.5 billion for Phase 2. This funding should be provided in addition to the $1.3 billion that was committed for the first 5 years. 3.30. The committee is aware of the growing anticipation felt by the disability sector regarding the important announcement of the second phase of Stronger Together. The committee recommends that the government announce the funding available for Stronger Together second by the end of November 2010. Recommendation 3. That the New South Wales government commit at least $2.5 billion to deliver Phase 2 of Stronger Together. That Phase 2 funding is provided in addition to the $1.3 billion in funding that was provided during Phase 1 and is announced by the end of December 2010. Recommendation 4. That the Minister for Disability Services table an annual report to Parliament on the implementation and expenditure of Stronger Together second procurement of services funded by ADHC. 3.31. As identified previously, ADHC funds a large number of organisations, including other government agencies, to provide various services for people who are ageing, people with disability and their carers. Service provider and advocacy organisations that participated in the inquiry identified a range of problems with ADHC's funding of organisations, not only in terms of the level of funding to provide services, which was seen by some participants as insufficient to meet service users' needs, but also the process of tendering for available funds and meeting funding obligations. 3.32. ADHC routinely allocates funding through competitive tendering processes. Some participants noted that over time competitive tendering had led to a significant increase in the number of service providers in New South Wales. 28. However, competition for funding between services did not necessarily result in increased choices for service consumers. NCOS, for example, expressed the view that, in reality, the weight of unmet demand usually dictates that the service user gets to choose only whether to accept the services offered, not to freely choose from among a number of service providers. 29. 3.33. NCOS also noted that competition between service providers had led to unintended negative effects, as services were less inclined to share information and cooperate with each other. 30. 3.34. Several participants expressed concerns about the burden that the tendering process placed on service providers. Tendering for funds requires the provision of detailed planning and other information. Because organizations may be required to tender for funding repeatedly, the process of tendering itself can create a significant management and administrative burden. For example, Anglica described this burden. The process of tender application is unnecessarily costly and time-consuming. Even where a relationship already exists with a department such as ADHC, not-for-profits are required to pour the same extensive resources into fresh tender processes. 31. 3.35. Mr. Barry Stiles explained that, although the number of people who receive services from his organization has doubled since 1999, his services received no additional funding from ADHC. He has observed a larger funded organization receiving new funding in his local area, rather than his service, which was already well established to provide these services. 32. 3.36. Some participants were also concerned that the requirements of competitive tendering inherently favored large organizations which have more resources to direct towards tendering processes. 33. Further, some participants felt that while competitive tendering may lead to better tender applications, it does not necessarily produce better services. For example, Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive Officer, Carers New South Wales, observed that just because people might write a better tender does not mean they cannot deliver the service, but you have larger non-government organisations able to outsource the development of a tender, even a professional writer, all those kinds of things that are so far removed from the actual service on the ground. But they can tick all the boxes in a way that maybe a smaller non-government organisation cannot. It is not an even playing field. 34. 3.37. Some participants expressed concerns that over the long term competitive tendering may lead to loss of small locally based service providers. 35. Ms. Emily Kasker, State Policy Coordinator, National Disability Services, suggested that preference for larger services over smaller ones may be a deliberate strategy on the part of ADHC. There are concerns by some of our member organizations around preferential procurement of services, particularly in the western and the northern region. There is some fear of small providers being taken over by large statewide providers, and that was very clear in our consultations with the sector. 36.3.38. The committee was advised by NCOS that the New South Wales HACC Issues Forum suggested that introduction of back quote approved provider status may reduce the burden on services, particularly smaller services. 37. National Disability Services suggested moving towards mutual recognition of quality assurance frameworks of different jurisdictions. 38.3.39. Mr. Mark Drivaskis, Executive Director, Best Buddies Australia, recommended that funding be awarded for 3-year periods to provide improved security and enable funded organisations to effectively forward plan. 39.3.40. The Shepherd Centre submission recommended that ADHC implement improved transparency and consistency regarding the amount of funding that is allocated to organisations. 40. Compliance requirements. 3.41. Service providers expressed concerns about the burden of complying with accountability requirements for services funded by ADHC. Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Director, New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability, stated, "People constantly report, both service users and service providers, that they are frustrated by a lack of transparency in the department, a lack of clear information, that there is too much red tape, paperwork, activities and process that, rather than enhancing services and enabling people, actually frustrates them." 41.3.42. The burden of reporting is increased by the need to comply with different requirements of different funding bodies, such as Commonwealth agencies, as well as different projects funded by one agency such as ADHC. The Disability Trust provided the following example of its reporting requirements. "The disability services sector can be highly regulated, with mandatory external and internal accountability demanded by various jurisdictions. In addition to the general corporate regulations, taxation, ONS, Privacy Act provisions, charitable fundraising compliance, and financial audit requirements, there are a range of specific standards and accreditation processes that may be required by providers in the sector. Some that are pertinent to the trust include New South Wales Disability Service Standards, measurable in previous years through the Integrated Monitoring Framework, Commonwealth Disability Standards, Attendant Care Industry Accreditation, also externally measured, Office of the Children's Guardian Registration, and statutory out-of-home care compliance. Accountability is further demonstrated through regular quarterly data returns, external scrutiny through a community visitors scheme, and end-of-year financial acquittals. Additionally, the expression of interest process for new funding requires evidence of an organization's capacity to deliver the quality and outputs of services that are subject to tendering. These overlaying accountabilities can divert energy and resources from the most important part of the care system, that is, interface with clients. 42.3.43. This view that meeting compliance requirements diverted resources away from service delivery was shared by National Disability Services. National Disability Services felt that reducing the burden of compliance with reporting requirements would increase resources available for service users. By reducing requirements on non-government providers in the tendering process and in monitoring of performance, the backquote burden on providers can be reduced, freeing resources for service delivery and achieving outcomes for people with disability. 43.3.44. Several participants in the inquiry referred to the work already undertaken by the Department of Human Services in its NGO Red Tape Reduction Report, 44, which is to be jointly implemented by the Department of Human Services and the New South Wales Department of Health, 45. Committee comment. 3.45. The committee recognises the burden that multiple accountability requirements can create for non-government organisations, particularly small organisations and those that provide services funded from multiple sources. 3.46. The committee commends the government on its NGO Red Tape Reduction Report. However, the committee notes that ADHC has yet to report publicly on implementation of the recommendations from this report. Recommendation 5, that the Minister for Disability Services report publicly on ADHC's implementation of the recommendations of the NGO Red Tape Reduction Report by November 2011, including the level of third-party outsourcing by ADHC NGO contracted service providers, funding and procurement inconsistencies. 3.47. Service providers also expressed frustrations about inconsistencies or inequities in funding, and in ADHC's decision-making processes in relation to funding. Participants in the inquiry raised a number of issues in this regard, and these are briefly canvassed below. 3.48. Some participants expressed concerns about ADHC's position as both a purchaser/funder of services and a provider. One of the long-held concerns in the sector, observed Mr. Mayer, is the concept of the funder being a competitor and being the policeman. 46. This potential conflict of interest is examined in more detail in Chapter 9. 3.49. Northcote Disability Services identified that non-government organizations may be funded at a lower rate than ADHC for the delivery of the same service. In the disability system, ADHC is both the funding body and a provider of some direct services, for example, center-based respite, case management, therapy. However, non-government organizations, NGOs, are often funded at a lower rate than ADHC services for providing the same service. As a result of this, staff working in NGOs received lower rates of pay than those working in ADHC services. This can serve as a barrier to attracting skilled staff to the NGO sector. 47. 3.50. Workforce issues were identified as a significant issue by numerous service providers, and these are discussed in detail in Chapter 11. For example, indexation of funding was seen as inadequate to cover full increases in costs, while ADHC's own services were not subject to the same constraints. 48. Funding inequities between regions. 3.51. The Physical Disability Council of New South Wales and the Council on the Aging also pointed out that there are inequities between different areas of the state, simply because of variations in the cost of delivering services. The difficulty and expense of delivering services in rural and remote areas was raised by a number of participants. Rural and remote communities struggle with minimizing and controlling costs. Costs in these communities are considerably higher than metropolitan areas. Whilst rent may be cheaper in the country than in the city, other costs can be extremely prohibitive, such as fuel, food, and water. Simply put, it costs more in the country to deliver services. 49. 3.52. However, some participants noted that inequities between regions can also arise as a result of administrative decisions. 50. Because ADHC often makes funding decisions on a regional basis, inconsistencies between ADHC regions can produce inequities or inconsistencies for both service providers and, ultimately, service users. For example, people with disability noted that different ADHC regions can vary in the way services are delivered depending on the availability of service types and the interpretation of service and funding guidelines. 51. 3.53. Such inconsistencies in the administration of funding were a source of considerable frustration for service providers, particularly those which delivered services on a strata-wide basis. National Disability Services commented that, "Here are some slight inconsistencies that we continue to work with ADHC on. The main ones are inconsistency in the application and interpretation of policies. The policies of our providers who work with different regions can be implemented completely differently, depending on which level of middle management is implementing the policy." 52. Individualized funding. 3.54. Individualized or self-directed models of funding were widely supported by participants in the inquiry. These models were seen as consistent with the aim of person-centered approaches to service provision, which are discussed in more detail in Chapter 4 and Chapter 5. The key advantage of individualized funding is that it offers service users a greater level of control and choice over the services they receive. This was highlighted by Ms. Joanne Hewitt, chairperson of the Futures Alliance. "I think that the move towards individualized funding, and even self-managed funding, is a very important step. Certainly, I think it addresses the need for people with a disability to be in control of their own lives." 53. 3.55. Mr. Greg Killeen, Senior Policy Officer, Spinal Cord Injuries Australia, echoed this view, stating, "We are all individuals who would like to have a good life which may only be achieved with access to, and support from, a choice of appropriately funded, and coordinated disability-specific or community services and programs, and the option of individualized funding to enable us to have some autonomy, and control over the services we require." 54.3.56 Some inquiry participants also felt that individualized funding has the potential to allocate funding efficiently, as the relationship between the consumer and provider of a service is more direct. Ms. Regan identified a disconnect in current funding models. "Right now there is a disconnect in the market. When we use market theory, the people who are actually purchasing the service are not the people using it. So the satisfaction and degree of quality can be quite different, and the way it is measured can be quite different. When a person with a disability and their family become the purchaser, suddenly the services we all know need to lift their game." 55.3.57 The committee heard that individualized funding models had the potential to provide greater flexibility in the delivery of services. "Lack of flexibility in guidelines and eligibility for ADHD services is a major frustration for service providers. For example, according to NCOS, in previous years during the NCOS regional visits to regional and country centers, disability providers consistently complain of the lack of flexibility in guidelines and contracts to meet the needs of their service users with disability. This complaint is second only to inadequate resources." 56.3.58 The inflexibility of funding guidelines can also have serious effects for service users whose needs are not met. For example, Ms. Regan reported that we have the ludicrous situation of a family on the North Coast who cannot get enough continence aids, but is offered a holiday. 57.3.59 Despite their potential, individualized funding is not widely used in New South Wales at present. People with disability, which strongly supports the development of individualized funding mechanisms, commented on the lack of options available to consumers. "Currently, individualized funding and self-directed supports are not widely available for people with disability in New South Wales. There are some programs that provide individualized funding with varying levels of control by the person receiving the funding, but generally, people with disability are reliant on what the service system provides, what support they are eligible for, and the type of support that is available." 58.3.60 Mr. Moore acknowledged that individualized funding mechanisms are not yet widely used in New South Wales. He expressed concerns about the workforce implications of this model. "In the New South Wales context, we have chosen not to move rapidly down the path of individualized funding. We have quite a bit in little places, but it has not become a whole-scale system setting, because we need to solve the issue of where the workforce is going to come from." 59.3.61 Mr. Moore also noted that self-directed funding options were not always popular with service users. For example, the direct-funded model implemented in ADHC's attendant care program, which provides personal care assistance for people with physical disabilities, was not widely adopted by service users. 60. Mr. Moore reflected on the possible reasons for this. Northeast important point of this space is that with individual funding models, even where there has been a lot of flexibility made in the English circumstance, you see a relatively small proportion of people take it up. We have one experience where in recent years our attendant care program, which provides fairly intensive generally in-home support for a person, we now say, if you want it, you can have the money direct into your bank account, the ultimate flexibility in a way. Of the just over 700 people that we have, 18 have elected to take up the arrangement, and that is a reflection that people need a lot of help and support. 61.3.62 Mr. Gordon Duff, State Manager, Policy and Projects, National Disability Services, felt that there is a lack of clarity about exactly what is meant by terms such as " individualized and " self-directed funding. This is an area in which there is a certain lack of clarity of language in describing personalized approaches in disability services. A lot of people describe individualized funding, and they think they mean the same thing when someone else talks about it. 62.3.63 Mr. Duff emphasized that terms such as " individualized funding" or backquote self-directed funding, can refer actually to a number of different models of providing funding. All of these models aim to provide service users with a greater level of control over the services they receive. T here needs to be a continuum of different offerings to people with a disability. One of those, right at the extreme end, is the direct payments model that can move right along to a looser allocation for a place in a day center or supported accommodation. There is a range of different models that we say can enable choice and voice and control, and they do not always need to be the passporting over of money to the service recipient. 63.3.64. Ms. Hewitt also expressed the view that different models of individualized funding may be necessary, as different service users may have varying levels of capacity, or importantly, desire, to manage service funding. As you say, though, that can look different for different people. There are some people and some families who can make those decisions, and who wish to, and others who may require immense support, and may in fact also require, or want, an organization to take some control of that. 64.3.65. Some inquiry participants acknowledged concerns about the risks involved in moving to individualized funding. 65. For example, Carers New South Wales acknowledged concerns and explained that it was working to develop individualized funding models which minimized probity risks. It can be difficult, and there is a lot of evidence from the United Kingdom around problems within those sorts of consumer-directed care packages in that way, where they employ family members. The model we have and what we are working on works because we defer that risk to the employment agency. Yes, there is a small risk that comes off the package for the family, but we think it is worth it. 66.3.66. However, it was also noted that, on a large scale, the implementation of individualized funding could be complex. Further, not all services can be provided in an individualized way. This potential for complexity was raised by Ms. Margaret Bowen, Chief Executive Officer of the Disability Trust. In the old days, funded services just opened their doors and said, "This is what you will receive." The management of those sorts of systems is not complex. Delivering flexible service systems is incredibly complex. Other issues include sustaining infrastructure around individual funding. It is all very well to say individualized funding, but people have to have the option of having the infrastructure there to access, and sometimes that does not work very easily within an individual funding model. 67.3.67. Carers New South Wales pointed to the My Plan My Choice pilot project, which is currently being trialled in the northern region. 68. This project provides funds to an intermediary service, which works with older carers, to identify appropriate supports and manage funding. Ms. Elena Katrakis of Carers New South Wales expressed the view that it seems to be making a real difference to people's lives. 69.3.68. The Minister for Disability Services identified that Phase 1 of Stronger Together provided greater funding flexibility in disability service provision. He provided an example of the Family Assistance Fund, which provides families with increased flexibility and accessing services and equipment. Families who are caring for children with a disability now have greater flexibility through programs such as the Family Assistance Fund, because they are able to purchase services and equipment that are not available to other programs or other funding sources. Since June 2007, almost 5,000 families have accessed the fund. The Extended Family Support Program provides up to $50,000 in flexible funding to families who require significant levels of support to be able to continue to care for their child with a disability, who is under 18 years of age. The Flexible Respite Program and Individual Accommodation Support Packages are other important examples of the new options that the Kennedy government is developing to provide more individualized support. 73.69. The New South Wales government has committed to providing personalized funding as part of the second phase of Stronger Together. The Minister for Disability Services told Parliament that the New South Wales government will, as part of the next five-year phase of Stronger Together, deliver personalised funding arrangements for people with a disability as part of our person-centred approach. 71.3.70. The Minister stated that the government is moving away from a one-size-fits-all service system, where people will take up places that may be available, to one in which people receive truly individualized, natural and creative support. 72. Committee comment. 3.71. The committee acknowledges that individualized funding packages offer people who are aging, people with a disability and their carers the potential for greater flexibility and control of the services that support them. 3.72. The committee recognizes that there are a range of possible models of individualized funding that may enhance autonomy for consumers, and recognize that self-directed funding may not be desirable or appropriate for all service users. 3.73. The committee acknowledges the commitment from the Minister for Disability Services to deliver personalized funding options for people with disability, and commends ADHC for its work in developing individualized approaches to funding to date. The committee believes that further work to identify effective models is needed, and that the result of this work should be made public. 3.74. The committee believes that ADHC should work towards increasing the availability of individualized funding options across all service types. The committee believes that the next phase of Stronger Together should include development of a comprehensive strategy to implement individualized funding models for people who are aging, people with disability and their carers in New South Wales. Recommendation 6. That the next phase of Stronger Together include development of a comprehensive strategy to make individualized funding models available for all people who receive services from ADHC, who wish to utilize them. 1. Submission 31, Aging, Disability and Home Care, P6. 2. Submission 31, P6. 3. Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P2. 4. Mr. Douglas Erd, Executive Officer, Disability Council of New South Wales, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 28. 5. Submission 30, Council of Social Service New South Wales. Submission 39, New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability. Submission 23, Family Advocacy. Submission 91, People with Disability Incorporated. 6. Submission 51, Physical Disability Council of New South Wales and Council on the Aging New South Wales, P4. 7. Submission 38, Ms. Jennifer Allo-Ohm, P2. 8. Ms. Samantha Edmonds, Deputy Director Policy and Communications, Council of Social Service of New South Wales, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P56. 9. Professor Ron McCallum, Chair, Disability Council of New South Wales, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P28. 10. Ms. Christine Regan, Senior Policy Officer, Council of Social Service of New South Wales, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P58. 11. Mr. Moore, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P7. 12. Submission 32, National Disability Services, New South Wales, P10. 13. Submission 91, P6. 14. Ms. Regan, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P62. 15. Mr. Patrick Mather, Chief Operating Officer and State Manager, National Disability Services, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P38. 16. Submission 30, P7. 17. Mr. Moore, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P6. 18. Mr. Moore, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P9. 19. Submission 39, P10. Submission 32, P10. 20. Submission 33, Carers New South Wales, P2. 21. Answers to questions on notice taken during evidence, 9 August 2010, Ms. Edmonds, P9. 22. NSWBD, Legislative Council, 1 September 2010, P24953. 23. General Purpose Standing Committee 2, Inquiry into Budget Estimates 2010/11, The Hon. Peter Primrose, Minister for Disability Services, 13 September 2010, P29. 24. Mr. Moore, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P6. 25. Mr. Hurd, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P32. 26. Mr. Patrick Mather, Chief Operating Officer, National Disability Services, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P38. 27. Mr. Hurd, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P32. 28. Answers to questions on notice taken during evidence 9 August 2010, Ms. Edmonds, P11, 29, answers to questions on notice, taken during evidence 9 August 2010, Ms. Edmonds, P11, 30, answers to questions on notice, taken during evidence 9 August 2010, Ms. Edmonds, P12, 31, Submission 66, Anglica, Diocese of Sydney, P6, 32, Mr. Barry Stiles, 33, answers to questions on notice, taken during evidence 9 August 2010, Ms. Edmonds, P12, 34, Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive Officer, Carers New South Wales, evidence, 9 August 2010, P49, 35, Ms. Kerry Stubbs, Chief Executive Officer, Northcote Disability Services, evidence, 26 August 2010, P56, 36, Ms. Emily Kasker, State Policy Coordinator, National Disability Services, evidence, 9 August 2010, P40, 37, answers to questions on notice taken during evidence, NCOS, 9 August 2010, P12, 38, Submission 32, P23, 39, Submission 76, Mr. Mark Drivaskis, Executive Director, Best Buddies Australia, P4, 40, Submission 80, The Shepherd Centre, P6, 41, Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Director, New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability, evidence, 26 August 2010, P11, 42, Submission 107, The Disability Trust, P6, 43, Submission 32, P11, 44, Ms. Stacey Shepherd-Smith, Executive Officer, New South Wales Home Modification and Maintenance Services State Council, evidence, 3 September 2010, P12, Submission 32, P72, 45, New South Wales Department of Premier and Cabinet, Non-Government Organisation Red Tape Reduction Report, November 2009, 46, Mr. Mayer, evidence, 9 August 2010, P41, 47, Submission 70, Northcote Disability Services, P5, 48, Submission 66, P4, 49, Submission 51, P10, 50, Submission 91, Submission 32, 51, Submission 91, P10, 52, Ms. Kasker, evidence, 9 August 2010, P36, 53, Ms. Joanne Hewitt, Chairperson, Futures Alliance, evidence, 3 September 2010, P47, 54, Mr. Colleen, evidence, 30 September 2010, P17, 55, Ms. Regan, evidence, 9 August 2010, P60, 56, Submission 30, P12, 57, Ms. Regan, evidence, 9 August 2010, P62, 58, Submission 91, P12, 59, Mr. Moore, evidence, 9 August 2010, P4, 60, Submission 31, P72, 61, Mr. Moore, evidence, 9 August 2010, P4, 62, Mr. Gordon Duff, State Manager Policy and Projects, National Disability Services, evidence, 9 August 2010, P40, 63, Mr. Duff, evidence, 9 August 2010, P40, 64, Ms. Hewitt, evidence, 3 September 2010, P47, 65, Ms. Regan, evidence, 9 August 2010, P63, Ms. Diana Kyan, Executive Director, Multicultural Disability Advocacy Association, evidence, 26 August 2010, P50, 66, Ms. Katrakis, evidence, 9 August 2010, P54, 67, Ms. Margaret Bowen, Chief Executive Officer, The Disability Trust, evidence, 3 September 2010, P54, 68, Submission 31, Appendices, p. 132, 69, Ms. Katrakis, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 47, 70, NSWBD, Legislative Council, the 26th of October 2010, p. 26, 71, NSWBD, Legislative Council, the 1st of September 2010, p. 24953, 72, NSWBD, Legislative Council, the 26th of October 2010, p. 26,